my college years were some of the best years of my life. Don't get me wrong, I'm very happy with the life I live, but my memories of those 4 years are eternal. My advice to anyone still in college, don't take it for granted, because it definitely flies by. I went to a beach college. Our campus was literally right on the water. This story takes place while I was undergoing pledge with my pledge class. If you don't know, that's basically a full semester of initiation for everyone who got bids to the frat that semester. Most of what happens during pledge is better left undiscussed. Anyway, it was the last week of pledge before we officially became brothers. Typically, this is the week where the fraternity kicks things up a notch, so to speak. For us, it was commonly understood that at some point during the final week, we'd have to undergo the beach challenge. Here's what would happen. The brothers would drive our entire class about 12 miles down the coast on Friday night. Then we'd have an hour to finish a massive keg filled with God knows what. Then they'd walk us down to the beach, tie all of our wrists together, blindfold us, take our phones, watches, and shoes, and leave us there. We'd have until sunrise to make it back to the house, otherwise we'd all be dropped. To be completely honest with you, I was pretty nervous leading up to this, but there was really nothing I could do. There was nothing any of us could do. I remember it being oddly chilly the night of, but the excitement of becoming a brother and finally being done with all this nonsense was adrenalizing. The kegs were the easy part. By this point, we were pretty comfortable with divvying up the alcohol and pulling trig if necessary. There were 15 of us. After tying us together, the brothers blindfolded everyone but Chandler, who was at the very front of the line. He was to be our eyes, but that's all the help we'd get. Our pledge master was this big Mexican guy named Ramirez, but he insisted we all call him Los Pollos, like the restaurant from Breaking Bad. He was a strange dude. He outlined the rules for us one last time, then joined the rest of the brothers and left. We were now on our own. I won't run you through everyone's names, but my closest friends in my pledge class were Chandler, Whitworth, Jackson, and Vikram. I was at the very back of the line, and Whitworth was directly in front of me. We began walking with Chandler leading us. It was hell. Without our phones, there really was no way of telling how much ground we were covering or how much time we had left. All we could do was keep walking. At first, we tried to liven the mood by talking and cracking jokes, but eventually that got old. After what I'll call 2 hours of walking, we were trudging along in complete silence, with the occasional stop for someone to throw up. I started to disassociate. Even the sounds of the ocean grew silent as I walked along, trapped inside my own head. It was completely silent. Suddenly, I felt a sharp tug on the rope around my wrists, so I took a few big steps forward and stopped, assuming Whitworth had fallen. Whitworth was a little more clumsy than most, so this kind of thing wasn't super surprising. I didn't really have the strength nor energy to ask him if he was all right, so I just waited. I must have been standing there like a statue for a full minute. Something felt off. I was just about to say something when the rope around my wrists was pulled tight again. I resumed walking, pleased that Whitworth hadn't passed out. The trek resumed, and I drifted back into my zoned out phase, feeling terrible. I prayed we were closing in on the final stretch. We had to be. Just then, I took what must have been my 10,000th step, but something was different. Instead of hitting damp sand, my foot slapped the unmistakable thin layer of ocean water. I took a few more steps and the water got deeper, reaching up to my ankles. I was confused. Why would Chandler be leading us into the water? The rope pulled tight again, meaning Whitworth and everyone else in front of me was continuing to walk, so I did the same. I guess I figured someone needed to wash off their feet for whatever reason. If no one else was complaining, though, I definitely wasn't going to start. The water remained ankle height for a while, advancing and receding with the sway of the waves. Just then, though, I felt the water begin to rise again, until it was comfortably around my shins. Chandler was definitely screwing with us, which, for the life of me, I couldn't understand why. Wasn't this stupid activity painful enough? The water was only going to slow us down. Seconds later, it began to pick up on a faint sound in the distance. I craned my ears and began to recognize it. It was the sound of an idling boat engine. As we continued to walk, the drone of the engine only got louder, meaning it was getting closer, or I was getting closer to it. I was starting to get really uncomfortable. The water was almost up to my knees at this point. Finally, I broke what must have been hours of unspoken silence. "Guys, what the hell are we doing in the water?" I waited, confused as to why no one was answering me. "Guys," I asked again in a more concerned voice. Still nothing. I could feel panic begin to set in. Suddenly, my blindness was suffocating. I had to look around. I reached my wrists up towards my eyes in an attempt to undo my blindfold. As I did so, the rope yanked away from me, forcing my arms back down. I cursed, plunging my head down towards my fingers and undoing my blindfold before the rope could be jolted away from me again. To my horror, Whitworth wasn't the one guiding me. Instead, I found myself staring at a random, middle-aged man holding the frayed end of the rope tied around my wrists. I stared in shock at the severed rope in his hand, and that's when I realized what had done the cutting. A long, rusty kitchen knife sat in his left hand. Past him, there was a boat bobbing in the water, and I could make out three more silhouettes towering on board. I screamed bloody murder before he had a chance to react, yanking my arms upward as fiercely as I could. At the same time, I lifted a foot out of the water and kicked his chest with all the strength I could muster. Luckily, the rope broke free from his grip. He grabbed my shirt to try and cushion his fall, but the fabric gave way with a deafening rip. He yelled as he plunged into the water with a huge chunk of my white pledge t-shirt, but I was already moving as fast as I could toward dry land, my wrists still tied. A few seconds passed before I heard a splash from further away. Someone had jumped off the boat. I didn't even look behind me, I just kept moving. I was about halfway to the sand when something whizzed right past my head, maybe a few inches from my right ear. It was the knife. I watched it shoot past me before disappearing into the water. I was in complete shock, but the adrenaline was doing its job. I got to land and for the first time looked back. There were two men in the water and two on the boat. They weren't chasing me anymore, just staring lifelessly in my direction. The closest man was still holding onto the white piece of my shirt that had torn off in the fray. I didn't waste another second. I ran up the beach and made it to the street. By this point, it was past sunrise, but my frat was the last thing I was thinking about. I flagged down the nearest car, and after pleading to use their phone, called the police. It was no use. By the time the cops showed up, the four men were gone, presumably off to wherever in that tiny little boat of theirs. I lied to the cops about what happened, worried that there might be repercussions for the frat. Luckily, they didn't ask questions. I didn't get too much crap from my frat brothers. They were actually more pissed at Chandler for not realizing what had happened, even though he swears he didn't hear a thing. After that, I became a brother, and things went back to normal. Well, normal for a while. A few weeks later, a couple of the guys and I were playing beach die in the sand behind the house when Jackson noticed something in the distance. There was a stick poking out of the sand, and tied to that stick was the white piece of cloth that had been torn from my t-shirt. The design on the ripped stick was unmistakable. It was my shirt. To this day, I have no idea how they knew which frat I was in. My brothers think they might have recognized the piece of my t-shirt, but I have a more sinister theory. I think it's very possible that they knew our frat would be sending us pledges on that beach that night, helpless and blind. I think they very well could have planned the whole thing around that stupid tradition, swooping in and kidnapping whoever they could. I was just unlucky enough to be in the back, which still gives me chills to this day. I still wonder what might have happened to me had I gotten on that boat. The police, as always, were useless. It's been nearly a number of years, and they never found anything. This happened to me about a year ago today, which is why I'm writing about it now. I'm a 19-year-old college student that was in the middle of joining a fraternity on my campus. I go to a big party school down south, and Greek life is taken very seriously there. For privacy reasons, I'll spare the specific details, but this particular night was my initiation, meaning the night that me and my class of 20 students would officially become brothers of the fraternity. During the process of joining, which lasts a couple of months, the brothers would make us do odd things, like blindfold us and take us to strange places. You know, typical hazing stuff. This was one of those nights. We were blindfolded and left the frat house around 10:30 p.m. The brothers took our phones and drove us to a mystery location, split between a couple different cars to make sure we all got there. On the way over, they made us try and memorize some corny song while it blasted on full volume. We always had to do these annoying tasks while blindfolded. I guess as part of the whole hazing thing. Anyway, after about 20 minutes of driving, the car stopped and I heard the doors open and close. I felt a hand grab my arm and silently usher me out of the car. We walked probably 200 feet, where I was then told to sit down and be quiet. I was sitting on grass, so I assumed we were in a field or something. I could also tell I was sitting near people because I heard them sit down, and I also heard the brothers telling each of them to be quiet. After about a minute of sitting in silence, I heard a voice speak to all of us, saying a bunch of fraternity-related things, but mostly about how we were deemed worthy of becoming a part of the Brotherhood. Then, over the course of like 30 minutes, I sat in silence, occasionally hearing the sound of footsteps and movement around me. I figured they might have been doing the final steps of initiation with each person individually, like walking them away to talk to them in private. I didn't know for sure, but being blindfolded meant I was just left to my imagination. There was a time, though, when the footsteps went away, and all I was left with were the sounds of crickets and leaves rustling through the night breeze. I began to grow uncomfortable, as it must have been like 20 minutes that I was sitting there in silence. Then suddenly, I finally heard the footsteps of one of the brothers walk up to me, and I felt a hand grab my wrist and lead me away. He didn't say a word, and neither did I. I just wanted to get it over with so I could take the stupid blindfold off. While we walked, I could feel the ground below me go from grass to more rough terrain. I could tell we were walking through a forest, as I felt branches and shrubs scrape against my body. We were walking for some time, and at one point, the blindfold became very uncomfortable around my eyes. I told him this and asked if we could stop for a second so I could adjust it. He stopped and let go of me. As I stood there rubbing my eyes from under the blindfold, I heard a deep, raspy voice say, "Take it off." I hesitated for a second, not knowing what to say. His voice threw me off, as it didn't sound like a voice I recognized. Needless to say, I took it off, and what I was greeted with was not what I imagined. I was standing face to face with some tall guy dressed in all black, wearing a vendetta mask. I let out a sharp yell and jumped back. A part of me thought this was just some fucked up hazing prank, but before a word could even escape my mouth, he lunged at me, yelling that he was gonna take me with him. We wrestled on the ground, and I could tell that he was trying to choke me out. With all my strength, I threw him off of me, got up, and bolted in the opposite direction, using nothing but moonlight to guide my way back. My heart was beating a million times a minute, and I kept looking back, fearing that he was following me. I eventually heard people yelling my name, and I nearly ran head-on into one of the fraternity brothers. I told him in scrambled, broken words that some random guy wearing a mask led me into the forest and tried fighting me, but before I could warn them any further, five or six of them rushed past me with flashlights looking to chase after him. One of them stayed with me to calm me down and walk me back to safety. When we made it out of the woods, I realized we were in a backyard, presumably one of the brothers' houses. I saw nearly the whole fraternity standing out on the porch, looking at us in shock. I asked them what the hell was going on. They said that since it was dark and that I was the last in line, the brother who was supposed to be escorting me somehow overlooked that I was there and completely forgot about me. They said a couple minutes later, one of them thought they saw movement in the woods, which was around the same time that they realized I wasn't in my group. I was in such shock I couldn't even be pissed about it. None of them knew who that man was, but some of the brothers speculated it could have been a brother from another fraternity. Shortly after, flashlights emerged from the trees, and I saw them running back towards us. They told everyone to get the fuck out of there and get back to the campus immediately. He didn't ask questions. They locked up the house, and one of them got on the phone with the police. The whole car ride back, I was bombarded with questions, and I answered them the best I could with my mind still racing. I wondered where that man came from, why was he wearing a mask, and what he could have been leading me to. I made up scenarios in my head, like how it could have been a brother from a rival fraternity trying to steal me before I was initiated. That doesn't explain why the brothers locked up the house and called the police, though. I didn't find out until the next day, when one of the brothers who ran after him told me what they found in those woods, and what they found was not what I expected. As they were running, they saw a light in the distance. They grew silent, and when they got closer, they realized it was a bonfire in the middle of a clearing. Standing around the fire were several people dressed in all black and wearing white vendetta masks, chanting and throwing things into the fire. One of the brothers stepped on a loud branch, causing all of the masked men to turn and face them. They froze up, like something straight out of a horror movie, the mysterious men suddenly started running in their direction. They fled and made it back, where they told everyone else to leave and call the police. It seemed as though we somehow walked ourselves into some cult ritual meeting of some sort. I couldn't sleep for many nights after, and I tried my best to rid my mind of the situation. However, something that I heard from the fraternity a few days later sent shivers down my spine. While a few of them were playing football in the backyard of that same house, they found a white Vendetta mask hanging from a tree nearby. They called the police, and the cops took it for evidence and examination. I'm not sure if those guys were ever caught, or if the police even made anything of it. I'm also not sure what the hell those weird people were doing in those woods. I've been thinking about this experience a lot recently, and I'm glad that I was left with nothing more than a crazy story. It's been 8 years since I graduated from college. I went to Cooper Union, a small technical school smack dab in the middle of Manhattan. Going to school in New York City was amazing, and I wouldn't trade it for anything. We didn't have many frats back then, so I was sure to join whichever one I could just to ensure that I'd have parties to go to and whatnot. I was a relatively normal kid, so it wasn't too difficult to get a bid. Most of the pledge events were pretty tame, but I would soon find out what they were compensating for. I hope I don't get in trouble for divulging this story, but it happened so long ago that I figure it's safe to talk about. I doubt my old frat is still making their pledges even do this. I certainly hope they aren't. Anyway, the big thing that we'd do during our initiation was a subway crawl. I can't remember where exactly this was, but there was an old abandoned subway station that teenagers would typically explore. Our frat would make us enter from one of the active platforms, walk to the abandoned one, take some pictures, and then continue to the next active platform. We'd been given subway schedules to ensure that there was no chance a train would come around while we were vulnerable. We'd have plenty of time to get onto the abandoned platform, wait for one train to pass, and then make it to the next station. I know what you're probably thinking, but no, we didn't have to run from a train. The route was planned pretty well, and we all had a lot of leeway when it came to traversing the track. All we had to do was avoid the dangerous third rail and we'd be okay. I had been a big fan of urban exploring before college, so this was honestly more exciting than nerve-wracking for me. It was some random weekday at like 3 a.m. when our frat brothers made us go down into the subway. I'm pretty sure they picked this time because trains were very infrequent and we'd be protected at all costs. There were about 10 of us. I'm telling you, it was a pretty small school. You don't need to know everyone's name, but I should mention that my closest friend in my pledge class was an Albanian dude named Riker. He's the funniest guy you'll ever meet. My friends and I always said he should try and do stand-up comedy. He also smoked a crap ton of pot, which is important for this story. The group of us made our way into the subway unscathed. Riker and I brought up the rear because everyone else was too scared to do so. It was really dark in there, and our frat brothers had only given us 2 flashlights to share. Those flashlights and a single cheap film camera were all we had. At first, I was entrusted with one of the flashlights for being in the back, but I quickly gave it up to one of my pledge brothers who was whining about not being able to see. Not even 30 seconds into the walk, and Riker had his first genius idea. He pulled out a pre-rolled joint from his jacket and grinned, motioning for me to stop. "I don't have enough to share," he whispered, flicking his head in the direction of the other guys who hadn't noticed what we were doing. Against my better judgment, I obliged. Heck, when was I going to get the chance to light up in a subway tunnel again? The two of us smoked while we watched the other guys travel further away from us, their echoing laughter beginning to fade out. We finished the pot. We were a considerable distance behind the pack. Riker's stuff was really strong, and I found myself a little more absent-minded than I wanted to be. My tolerance was definitely not as high as his. The two of us picked up the pace to catch up with the rest of the group, but Riker noticed something in our way. We didn't have a light, so all we could see was the silhouette of someone in the dimly lit tunnel lights. I strained my eyes a little more. There was definitely a person in there, just standing motionless in the middle of the track, facing us. It was honestly a little creepy. "David?" called Riker, his voice piercing the silence of the tunnel. The person on the track didn't respond. Just then, David's voice called back to us from further up the line. The two of us froze. This person in front of us was a stranger. As if David's voice was some kind of switch, the person on the track started full-on sprinting towards us. The two of us turned around and bolted back the way we came. Being as high as I was, I felt like I was going to have a panic attack. The figure's sprint was eerily silent, as if we were being chased by a shadow. This guy must have been impossibly light. Riker's grip on my arm tightened, his goofy confidence completely gone. "Faster," he hissed, the fear in his voice mimicking my own. I knew we still had some time before the next train came, but running in the wrong direction just felt wrong. Riker must have thought the same thing, because he frantically pulled me to the side, motioning for us to cross the divider onto a different track. In hindsight, we probably could have continued running back to the original station, but I was so high that I just followed Riker blindly. We made it across the divider and sprinted back in the direction of the abandoned station. Things were even more terrifying now, though. We had literally no idea when a train was going to barrel down towards us on this track, but at least we were heading in the right direction. I hoped Riker's maneuver was enough to shake whoever was chasing us, but apparently it wasn't. Whoever was behind us also crossed the divider and kept running after us. The problem was there were only a few places where the divider could be crossed, so we'd have to pray we found another one before a train came. Turning around to the one we just used was no longer an option. My heart was thumping, but Riker and I were able to widen the gap between us and our pursuer. We kept running though, looking for a place to cross, but with no luck. Riker started cursing repeatedly, and I started feeling like throwing up. We kept running, still searching for a place to cross. Just then, the track started vibrating, and we could see light beginning to poke through at the distant end of the tunnel. A train was coming. We were screwed. I considered turning around and just fighting whoever was behind us, but then Riker screamed right here, running toward the divider. By some miracle, the next crossing point was right in front of us, and the two of us crossed back to the original track. We sprinted like another 30 yards and caught up with the rest of the guys who were on the platform. Riker explained the whole thing while I leaned over and threw up. Not even 30 seconds later, the train on the other track zoomed by. Riker and the rest of the guys were ready to confront whoever was chasing us. No one showed up, though. We thought the worst, but just then, we heard another crazed yell from somewhere in the distance. To this day, I still have no idea how that person avoided the train. We waited for the train to pass on our track and then sprinted the hell out of there. In hindsight, Riker and I probably just encountered some homeless guy who was drugged out and might not have even posed a threat to us. The fear took over in that moment, though, which I guess explains the stupid decision we made to cross over the divider. I'm sure the two of us also could have fended that guy off, but I'm glad we didn't have to.